Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of Horror Nights in Podcast with me, your host, Crystal. I also have my wonderful co-host, the one and only Roxy the Kitty, who adds in her comments here and there depending on the topic. So on this podcast, we talk about my life, my favorite horror movie of the week that you guys pick, also mental health pertaining to horror, and anything else horror. So thank you so much for being here. So I upload a new podcast every other Monday, and I also challenge all of you listening to leave me an iTunes review. It not only makes my days better, it also helps other horror fiends find me. You can, of course, always find me on the socials, on Twitter at @HorrorDaddiesRUs, Instagram at Horror Nights in Podcast, and on Tumblr, Horror Nights in Podcast. I also have a Slasher and a TikTok at Horror Nights in. So be sure to follow me on there for all the latest Horror Nights in news. All the links to my socials are in the show notes. Also a disclaimer, I am not a licensed therapist. I simply wish to take the stigma out of mental health. I'm always here to listen and also share my own stories. Remember, you're never alone if you struggle with your mental health. And if things get too dark, there is help. The National Suicide Prevention Hotline can be easily reached at 1-800-273-8255. It is available 24/7 and is free and provides confidential support to anyone distressed. So with that, let's get into the episode. Welcome to Horror Nights in Podcast.
Scary movies.
Uh-huh.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Johnny!
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
The boogeyman is real. And you found him.
It's showtime!
So, on this episode of Horror Nights In, I asked you guys on Twitter which film you wanted me to dive into, and as I said in the last episode, I want to focus more on mental health and how it shapes the film, the characters, and how horror uses mental health in the genre. And of course, while giving you guys my honest and horrific opinions, if you do follow me on Twitter and you did vote, I do appreciate that always. I love when you guys put your input into the show, because this show is yours just as much as it is mine. So this week you guys picked The Invitation, and if you've been listening to the show since the beginning, The Invitation was actually the first film that I ever did on this podcast. It was the first film that I analyzed and talked about the plot and the characters, and I gave you guys the Rotten Tomatoes, IMDb score, which I know I don't do as much anymore just because the show has kind of changed a little bit since then. So I'm really excited that we're going to be talking about this film again, because it's really good. And I remember the first time I watched this, and we're going to get into all that in a little bit. So mainly what I'm really excited about to talk about on this particular episode is the idea of cults. And I was doing research, and I will obviously share the articles that I've been reading to prepare for this episode. And I find the idea of a cult very fascinating, and I have always loved films that have centered around cults, documentaries about cults. And as I was doing my research, I realized that you can use the word cult for a lot of different things besides just something that could be negative. So I'm going to read you the definition of a cult, and then I'm going to talk about the film a little bit. There are spoilers, so if you haven't seen The Invitation yet, I do urge you to go see it, to go watch it, because it's a fascinating and it's a really good film. So let's, get the definition. So according to the internet, cult is a noun. It's a system of religious veneration and devotion directed towards a particular figure or object. And it's relatively a small group of people having religious beliefs or practices regarded by others as strange or sinister. So even the word cult, I feel, is just kind of scary when you say it too, because I feel like anytime you like hear like, oh, that's a cult, it's perceived as something negative. And so I just want to talk about the film a little bit, and then we'll kind of get into things that I have realized could be considered cults in a way, and I never really even broadened my horizon to think of them that way. So this film was released in 2015. It's an American horror thriller film. It was directed by Karen Kusama. It's a pretty good cast. I don't want to get too much into the actual film just because I have done this film already, and I want to make sure that I will hit on different facets of the film throughout the podcast. But so it premiered March 13, 2015 at the South by Southwest Film Festival. And so basically the film revolves around a male protagonist who's responding to his ex-wife's dinner party invitation, and he brings his girlfriend to this dinner party. There he relives the trauma of his ex-wife and his their child's death, and then he becomes suspicious that the ex-wife has ulterior motives for inviting him. So the main characters are Will, Kira, ex-wife is Eden. She has a new husband. His name is David. Will and Eden got divorced while they were trying to cope with their young son Ty's accidental death. If I can remember correctly, I believe he drowned. Eden met David at a grief support group, and their party will be the first time any of their friends have seen the couple in over 2 years. And then there's just throughout the evening, Will's starting to wander around the house because this is the house where he used to live. And he's starting to relive memories related to Ty's death, including Eden's attempted suicide. So there's also other guests that start to join them, and they kind of see that they are working through grief using spiritual philosophy. David then shows everyone a video in which their group leader, Dr. Joseph, is comforting a dying woman as she takes her last breath. It's very creepy. Then they play a weird game called I Want. Eden ends up kissing Ben. And just as the film progresses, it's just very anxiety ridden. It's very unsettling. So during the dinner, Will internally reflects on Ty's death. So you can kind of see sort of going in and out of reality. And then he does come upon a laptop with information about the actual invitation and their true motives, to create peace through death. And then everything kind of just starts to happen very quickly. David pours drinks for the guests at the end of dinner. We find out that the entire time Will has this sort of, idea that this entire dinner party is orchestrated for something else, and this whole time you have no idea what's going on too, so you're sort of going back and forth with him as well, because you're like, is it a cult, is it just dinner, like what actually is going on? And then finally everything comes to fruition when we see that David actually had given them poison wine, and they all kind of just start dying one by one, and then it starts to get really crazy at the end. He finally realizes that Los Angeles is erupting in chaos after other cult members throughout the city carry out plans similar to David and Eden's. So the last scene of the film is very haunting. So if you obviously assume you listen to my warning, I did give you huge spoilers throughout that little summary. If you have seen the film, I hope that was just a little bit of a refresher. So the reason I like this film so much is because it is a very slow, slow burn. And then all of a sudden, within the last maybe like 10, 15 minutes of this film, chaos literally erupts everywhere around them. Everybody at the dinner party is dying. This person is being stabbed. This person's being shot. This person's being poisoned. And one by one, you see it all just starts collapsing. And it's all because Eden and David are a part of this cult where they welcome death and they want to Anyone who has been affected by death, they want to move them on peacefully. It's a really good film. And I think I watched the entire credits because I was not actually paying attention, because my entire mind was just so focused on the fact that Will was right the whole time, and how I actually did rewatch it a few nights ago just to refresh my memory. And it's interesting, this is the reason why I like spoilers. And my sister, she hates spoilers, and she's like, why would you want to know like what actually happens? And I said, because then I can pay attention to things and I can pick up on things. And yes, you can always rewatch a film, but for me, I like to know who the killer is and maybe a little bit of the motive, but not really, because I like to pay attention to how characters react to certain situations. And I have seen this film a few times, but more recently when I did watch it, there were certain things I picked up that I didn't realize, and I didn't pick up on these cues the first time I watched it, because I was just like, Will, trying to figure out, is this a cult? Is this not a cult? Is it just a dinner party? Is Eden just gone crazy? And has she just, you know, there's so many things. I feel like when you watch a film, you're trying, especially a horror film, you're trying to figure things out with the protagonist, with the main character, and you miss things. And there's things that directors and writers put in there so that you can rewatch it and you can say, oh, that's why this person said this, or this is why this person said that. So I think it's always good to rewatch a film, especially when it has like a psychological thriller. Black Swan, Shutter Island. I know I say these films a lot of times when I'm talking about, you know, mental health and things like that, mental health and horror, but they're just really good examples. Same with Psycho. It's just always good to refresh your memory when it comes to these films. Okay, so that's just a little quick summary. So I read two articles. The first one is the most interesting one, but I'm actually going to talk about a different one first, because this one is called The Invitation Ending Explained. It's from the cinemaholic.com. It was published in 2018. So basically, they're going through... the writer is talking about the film, and we see, oh, hello, Roxy. Roxy just joined us, guys, so she must have liked this film. So the writer of this article is talking about how the film, pretty much what I said, you know, how I touched on the film was very intriguing and it held you the entire time you were watching it. The invitation's ending is inevitable. We kind of all know what will happen, and yet we're intrigued till the last minute. The movie also plays on the known and draws us in on how it will all end. The writer then goes on to say how how it moves from conscious to subconscious existence to the core of the camp's ideology or method to heal, which basically translates into killing yourself. It's sugar-coated with all the gibberish, like you've made a choice and renounced all grief and pain. But in the end, its entirety depends on the sacrifice, and God knows what follows after. Obviously, Eden is a grieving mother whose loss of an only child was an overwhelming feeling, which she was not able to cope with. Then she separated from her husband. She looks for some kind of mechanism to relieve herself from what's going on around her, from the pain, anguish, and is led to the camp of David. Will, on the other hand, has a different life altogether. He's completely detached from his former world. It's only when he returns to the house that the feelings inundate him with guilt. The author moves on, the writer, he's talking about how it all starts rushing at the ends when Eden pours a glass with poisonous wine. The mixture of nervousness and joy blanks her face and is a forewarning of what is to come. And then the writer goes on to say the red lanterns in the neighborhood could mean that the members of the cult had selected a particular day to carry out the execution. After all, every reform needs a plan. And given how the scientific this whole endeavor is, organization and planning can be presumed notion in the end. So people who, like Sadie and Pruitt, who actually belong to the cult, or are hailed as outsiders might be assigned to neighborhoods, for ensuring the plan of mass killings go ahead and successfully. So the ending also beckons a question. Can the human mind be influenced so easily? Which brings us into the other article that I found from onlinepsychologydegree.info. Now, this article was long, so I'm not going to go through everything. Ooh, sorry about that. So the title of this article is 10 Things to Know About the Psychology of Cults. So the author, he lists 10 different points, and I'm going to kind of go through each one of them and give my opinion on them. So he starts this, I'm sorry, I actually don't know the author of this. It doesn't say, it's just, but of course I will link the article, of course. So he begins by saying, or she, both terrifying and utterly fascinating, cults have a tendency to capture the attention of just about everyone. Questions abound. Where do these people come from? What are they really doing inside these secluded compounds? Most interesting, perhaps, are the psychological components of cult life. Questions such as, who in the world would fall for that? In an effort to answer these questions and more, we've listed 10 things to know about psychology of cults. So it looks like this might have been a collection of thoughts from different psychologists. So the first one is, cults are attractive because they promote an illusion of comfort, which does make sense because as human beings, we all want comfort. We all want to feel secure. We all want to feel safe. We all want to feel like we are needed and wanted. So if you find someone who maybe be a little bit more secluded, maybe not have as many, you know, close with their friends or their family, they seek this outside comfort because, as I said, human beings, internally, we need, interaction with other people. Now, you guys know, if you listen to my other episodes, that I prefer to be by myself, but of course there are plenty of times when I need, you know, the comfort of other people, not through a cell phone, not through a computer. So internally, subconsciously, we all need that comfort. So the second thing it says is, cults satisfy the human desire for absolute answers. So I think a lot of people, including myself, have always had the question of, you know, why am I here? What am I supposed to do? Am I just a speck of dirt on this earth that's rotating in a Big Bang Theory kind of thing and one day could just be hit by an asteroid and die? Like, what's my purpose? So human beings, we crave clarity. Most people join cults because they believe they're being offered solid, absolute answers for questions such as good versus evil, religion, the meaning of life, politics, etc. So a lot of cult leaders will promote the message and the answers that are simple and seem to make sense, which is the exact opposite of what we've been provided in typical everyday life, because obviously we don't know what happens when we die. We don't even really know, is there God? Is there the devil? We know that there's good and bad things in the world, but how do we really know if it's something that's actually there? And these cult leaders sort of give you those answers. They can say things like, oh, well, I've been to heaven, or I've been to hell, or I've talked to God, or I've talked to my God, or, you know, I've talked to the gods, whatever it is. And since we've never really been given a definite answer, because obviously people don't come back from the dead, we don't have any answers. So these cult leaders can, you know, convince you that they've been somewhere, that they've seen things, that they, you know, they've talked to these other outside beings, and you're like, well, I don't really know anything else, so I guess that makes sense. The third thing it goes on to say is, those with low self-esteem are more likely to be persuaded by a cult environment, which is interesting and goes back to the mental state of people. Most people are often surprised to learn that those who join cults are for the most part, they're average people. They come from all backgrounds, all zip codes, all tax brackets. But research done in the past 2 decades has found an interesting pattern. Many people successfully recruited by cults are said to have low self-esteem. The article also goes on to say, people with low self-esteem are easier to break down than build back up in an effort to teach them that the cult is a supportive environment they're looking for, which does make sense. And it will make sense as I continue to kind of go throughout this article. because a lot of cults will do public humiliation and then build you back up again, and which does make sense, because someone with low self-esteem, you can't really connect with who you are, because you don't really have the confidence to figure out who you are. People with low self-esteem, and I'm not saying that I have high self-esteem, I'm just saying I think I'm like in the middle, but somebody who has low self-esteem, they are more susceptible to sort of involving themselves into something that's maybe not all that great for them. People with low self-esteem, I remember when I was in high school, I didn't have the best group of friends or making bad decisions, but I did it because that's just who I was at that time. And I kind of just went along with everybody. I knew it was bad, but I did it anyway. Once again, it's that whole finding comfort in things, acceptance. It's what we human beings deep down subconsciously crave. We crave acceptance, we crave intimacy, we crave just those things. And cults for people who have low self-esteem are very inviting. So then the next part says new recruits are love bombed. So I actually didn't know this term until I started reading this article. Once people have been recruited by a cult, they are often love bombed. This odd phrase is commonly used to describe the ways in which someone with low self-esteem is consistently flattered, complimented, and seduced in order to train their brain to associate the cult with love and acceptance. So that's really interesting, because I keep going, okay, so this is a little tidbit that you guys might not know about me. I love reading about MLMs. Now, if you don't know what an MLM is, it's multi-level marketing, and it's pretty much pyramid scheme, but with products. And pyramid schemes obviously were outlawed in the 70s, but it's the same idea. So there's so many different types of companies out there that are MLM. You can Google them. You can find them. There's one YouTuber I watch. She talks about MLMs all the time, and she exposes the things that they do. And, you know, you're basically giving your money away. You're paying thousands of dollars to get into this company, to, you know, run your own business kind of thing. I don't want to get too much into it, because there are a ton of other people who have done a lot more research than I have. So when you first join an MLM, they're like, we're so happy you're here, and you're going to be great. And this is the beginning of a new life, and you're going to be able to take care of your kids, and you're going to be able to, you know, your husband can quit his job, which is interesting, because the cult mentality is so similar to these MLMs. And I don't want to say MLMs are cults, because I'm not saying that at all. I want you guys to do your own research, and trust me, you will find yourself in a hole, because it's extremely fascinating. And also, disclaimer, I never suggest joining an MLM. They're basically thieves. So I know I said I wasn't going to give my opinion on it, but I don't want anyone getting wrapped up into that. I just find it very interesting as I'm reading this article on how MLMs are very similar to cults. So as I said, when you first join a cult, you can be love bombed. Oh, we're so happy that you're here. Oh, your life is going to be changed. You're going to have the best life ever. Everything is great and wonderful. It's going to be happening to you. And then the next part, which kind of goes into what I was just saying, women are more likely than men to join a cult. According to various research, women make up a whopping 70% of all cult members around the globe. Psychologists have different ideas about why women, then men join cults. Dr. David Brawley of Virginia Commonwealth University points out that women simply attend more social gatherings, either religious or otherwise. This makes women statistically more likely to join groups that will ultimately victimize them. Others suggest it has to do with the fact that women have been oppressed for much of the human history. Therefore, they're most comfortable being under an authority figure. Still, others write this off as total crock. Emma Klein, the author of best-selling cult-themed novel The Girls, theorizes that young women are often taught to seek the attention of men and to wait for rescue. Joining a cult, says Klein, is a way for many young women to feel as if they're seizing their destiny. which pertains back to MLMs. Pretty much, I'm going to say, I'm just talking off the top of my head, probably like 90% of people that are in MLMs are women because, you know, that's just how it rolls. And if you guys, like I said, do your own research when it comes to all this stuff, because it's just, I just find it very interesting because I literally just watched a video from the YouTuber that I was talking about where she uploaded another video about it. So it's just interesting. So many cult members have actually rejected religion, which I find interesting because you could also say that religion is a cult as well. Now, I am religious. I do pray. I do believe in God. And it's funny because as I said, when I read the definition of cult, it's sort of like a religious thing. And the little part of this article, people who have experienced religion or some point in their lives and they rejected it. Perhaps this is surprising considering many cults to be religious, as I said, or they at least claim to be. So it's pretty much the trend is a sign of something deeper. Many of those who join cults are intelligent young people from sheltered environments. Growing up in such an environment often means that many have a history of failing to achieve intimacy, of blaming others for their failures, and of consistently striving for perfectionist goals. So these characteristics make them prime targets for cult recruitment, which does make sense. You know, young people, sheltered environment, you're not really sure how the world actually works and how people can be very manipulating when you grow up in a sheltered environment. Now, I want to say that I wasn't, at least the primal parts of my life, I was not in a sheltered environment. Maybe from fifth grade to like eighth grade, it was more sheltered. But when you grow up in an environment to where you can be sheltered by your parents or your guardians, you don't really understand the manipulation of the world. You believe that everybody is good. Now, I still believe that there's good in everyone. Doesn't mean I have to like everybody. But I found that really interesting that many cult members reject religion. It's just, I just feel like there's some religious aspects of a cult, whether you worship the leader or you worship something else or you worship the ideals of the leader. But I mean, I guess it's once again going back to that thing of human beings want to know answers. They want to know what happens after they die. They want to know, you know, why am I here? What am I doing here? And I guess cult leaders sort of give them that because your average person might not believe in God. So I guess that would make sense. The next one is cults maintain their power by promoting an us versus them mentality, which I'm sure we can all understand that they prove very powerful because they're able to successfully isolate members from their formal non-cult lives. One of the ways cult leaders achieve this is to convince their followers they are superior to those not in the cult. The us versus them mentality ultimately leads to cult members isolating themselves socially from friends and family. They replace these relationships new ones inside the cult. So going back to the film, we obviously know that Eden and David isolated themselves for 2 years. No one had seen them. This was the first time that they, this is the first time that their friends and their family and, of course, Will, the ex-husband, had seen Eden. So obviously this would make sense. They isolated themselves for a while. When they were in this cult, it was, you know, if you have to join us because we know the right way, you know, our way is the best way and you can't take no for an answer kind of thing. And then we're going to kill you. So, the next one, cult leaders are masters at mind control. So cult leaders convince their victims to separate themselves from society, give up personal possessions, sometimes huge sums of money. They convince people to buy into whatever they're promoting. In order to do this, you kind of have to be a master at mind control and manipulation. Ways in which leaders gain control over cult members vary, but some popular methods include public humiliation, self-incrimination, brainwash, paranoia, which is kind of what I was talking about earlier with the whole like love bombing thing. So they hit you with all this love. They hit you with all this acceptance. We love you. We love that you're here. And then they sort of break you as soon as you become, you know, maybe not in a new inductee. You kind of just fall into line with the other cult members, and you start to not be uplifted as much. Now, this is not every single cult. These are just broad ideals that happen and could happen in a cult. So public humiliation, one such method includes someone sitting in a chair surrounded by other members, at which time they're required to admit their recent failures, base thoughts, shortcomings, etc. So it's kind of like going to therapy, but then being surrounded by like all of your family and friends, but like maybe some friends you don't trust. So self-incrimination. So this became popular with Jim Jones. Self-incrimination requires cult members to provide their leader with written statements detailing their individual fears and mistakes. The cult leader then can use these statements against them. So there was actually a film called The Sacrament that goes, it's actually an amazing film. It's kind of like a found footage. This guy's brother, sister, I can't remember exactly. It's been a long time since I watched the film, joins Jim Jones' cult. And where they, you know, you drink the Kool-Aid, and they go to try and rescue the relative, but then they pretty much realize that it's a cult. Brainwashing. Cult leaders are known to repeat various lies, distortions. Some members find it difficult to distinguish between reality and cult life. And of course, there's paranoia. To maintain a false sense of comfort, cults often rely on paranormal tactics. Cult leaders convince their victims that a group, their families, or the government is out to get them, but the cult can provide safety, which goes back to what we were talking about before with low self-esteem. If you don't have a strong bond with yourself and your family, these ideals can be very nurturing and they can make you feel better. Once a cult member comes to the conclusion that their family and country cannot keep them safe, they begin to worship and put all their faith in their cult leader. Jim Jones was especially skilled at this mind control trick. He would encourage members to spy on each other and consistently spoke through loudspeakers at all hours of the day so the cult members would hear his voice, whether awake or asleep. Once again, guys, if you have not seen The Sacrament, I know it was on Netflix for a while. I would definitely go watch it. It's very creepy. It's very scary, but it's very good. And this one hit me really hard. Cult members often have no idea that they're in a cult. Although it can be obvious to the people around them, people in cults often don't realize that they become a part of it. So it's, you know, most people enter a cult willingly without realizing the power it's bound to have over them. Partly because some people are more willing to see the perceived benefits than the potential dangers. The article also mentions that some people assume cults are only religious. Therefore, in truth, cults can also be political groups, lifestyles, or business groups. So once again, I want to go back to the MLM thing. business groups, MLMs are businesses. People inside of these MLMs have no idea. They don't think that they're in a cult because they're always surrounded by these people who have the same ideas, who are saying the same things, who are selling the same things. So if you try to talk to somebody who is in an MLM, they're basically just, you could be like, girl, you're in a cult. And they're going to be like, no, I'm not in a cult like this. I'm running my own business. So like I said, if that stuff sounds interesting to you, do your own research. We can talk about it. DM me. I find it very fascinating. And then the last one is, of course, cult life can be dangerous and have a lasting effect. Cult victims often spend years overcoming the emotional damage incurred during the time spent in a cult. Psychologists who treat former cult members routinely describe the long-term effects being in a cult environment can have on the human body. Symptoms of temporal lobe epilepsy are similar to those seen or reported as resulted from cult conversions, increased irritability, loss of libido, or altered sexual interest, compulsive attention to detail, mystic states, humorless insobriety, and heightened paranoia, which is extremely scary, to say the least. So be careful out there, guys. Don't get into cults because they're really scary. But I feel like everybody who at least listens to this podcast has some kind of fascination with cults, and we can kind of not get ourselves involved in them. So that article is probably one of the most interesting articles that I've ever read, because I of course, have always had a fascination with cults. And the debate can go on forever. You can say that religion is a cult. You can say that gangs are a cult. You can say that MLMs are a cult. You can say that belonging to a business or, you know, working for a company is a cult. You can say that life in general is a cult. I just feel like there's so many different facets of the word cult and what it could mean and what it does to people. You know, me at least, I've just always found documentaries about cults very interesting. And they're really sad too, because the people that join them are people who just, they're like as the article said, they can be, you know, young people who are very sheltered, and they get themselves into this whole other world, thinking that it's an answer to life, that this is because they want to belong. I feel like for the most part, though, people are pretty smart. But who knows? I mean, you could find yourself trapped in a cult one day and not even realize it until somebody tries to, you know, people have tried to talk to you about it. I also feel like it's a very controversial topic as well, because it's, the word is thrown around a lot, but the actual activity of being, you know, of being in a cult is something extremely scary. To be isolated from your friends and your family, and then to, if you ever do, you know, if you do successfully get out of one, all of the things that you have to deal with once you're out of it. And that's why I think I really liked this film, and I was happy that you guys picked it, because it involves something that I could do research on, and especially when it comes to mental health, because there's things like gaslighting that goes on in cults, manipulation and public humiliation and paranoia, which are all things that you would deal with, and all pertaining back to mental health, and just how crazy some people can be. And just, I don't really like saying the word crazy. It's not really my favorite word. But just how out there, how manipulative these cult leaders can be. And I mean, you could say that, you know, Hitler was a cult leader, and, you know, the Nazis were, you know, the members. There's just so many different things you could look at and sort of see the similarities of what I talked about and things. And I'm sorry I went off on a tangent a little bit about MLMs. I just have just been been watching so many YouTube videos about them, because I find women in them. I really want to do like a, I really want somebody to do like a study on it. And I feel like as these businesses and quotations continue, I feel like more and more people are trying to raise awareness that they're not good. But if you have not checked out this film, I really would. It's such a good film. Like I said, very slow burn, but an amazing film, especially if you like cults. So I think that's going to be it for this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in with me, your host, Crystal, and of course, Roxy. If you enjoyed this episode, go listen to another one, binge it out, leave me a review, and have the best week ever wherever you are. And whatever you do, remember to always give your honest and horrific opinion no matter what. And remember, you are never alone when dealing with your mental health. Have a good week, guys. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Welcome to Horror Nights In Podcast.
Scary movies?
Uh-huh.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Here's Johnny!
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
The boogeyman is real. And you found him.
It's Johnny!